basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-point stripe.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fade away.
Giants for the win. James puts up the three. Oh, it's good!
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in! With 5 tenths of a second remaining!
What's up, Laker fans? End of an era. You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And today, Shams reports that LeBron has informed the Lakers that he will not be playing for them next season, continuing his career somewhere else. D, this is something we've talked about for a good while on this pod. I've been asserting that the odds of him being back were much lower than were being reported. And here we are, 8 years with LeBron. I think the longest single tenure that he had with any spot, man. What's your reaction to today's news?
Oh, man, a bunch of mixed emotions. A few days ago on the pod or a few episodes ago, I randomly just started talking about LeBron and got a little bit fired up about his legacy and stuff with the team. I think we'll have a whole pod at some point soon talking about the LeBron era in more depth. But mixed emotions for me, Pete. I had been bracing for this. You and I had been having conversations both on and off the pod about exactly what you laid out before. This idea of LeBron not being back, that it was probably a mix of maybe him thinking about other opportunities, but also the Lakers potentially trying to transition to the Luka era fully, 100%. And LeBron is such a huge figure. Just look at the reaction online in the immediate aftermath of the reporting around this. He's one of the singular athletes in the history of the sport, in the history of all sports. He's the oldest NBA player. He's played the most storied NBA career. He's still an all-star level player right now, and he's leaving the team. At the very end of the Lakers playoff run, when we first started forecasting to the offseason, I think I said almost a verbatim quote on this pod where every really good version of the Lakers team that I try to build out for next season has LeBron on it. Now, I was hopeful and under the impression that he would take less money. And in the very best versions of a Lakers roster that I could build, he was taking a lot less money, maybe even down to the mid-level or even below. Now he's not going to be on the team at all. It looks like the Warriors are a team to watch in terms of the pursuit of LeBron, and that's a whole different conversation. But in terms of where my emotions are, I'm sad that he's leaving the Lakers. I am grateful that he was on the Lakers at all and everything that he contributed to the team, the organization, the COVID years where he was a rock for the team right in the aftermath of Kobe's passing. He was just an amazing sort of stalwart for the franchise. And lastly, I'm happy for LeBron. If this is what he wants and this is what he's going to do, he's earned this right beyond anything else. But also, he's just been such a critical figure to the Lakers' success during this stretch of when he's been on the team. I'm happy for whatever he decides to do, for whatever team that he decides to play for. And there will always be a piece of my heart that is sort of dedicated to cheering for LeBron James. And this is what he does. In this past week and a half, Pete, I saw Cavs fans sort of being like, oh, what would it be like to have LeBron back? I saw Heat fans sort of pining for the possibility of a LeBron return. And I feel that there's this quality that he brings with him when he represents your organization. And there's a longing for that feeling again, over and over and over again. And that's why even after a season in which, you know, he was hurt to start the year and everything else, it's bittersweet for me.
Yeah, man, a lot of emotions on my end. I have the same sadness and gratitude. I have an understanding from the Lakers' perspective. But what you just said at the end right there really hits home for me. You know, I'm an old Kobe guy, right? Like, Kobe was my guy coming into the league, 2 years older than I was, and really looked up to him. And, you know, I got in a lot of arguments about LeBron James. Like, he was a villain, like a sports villain for us Kobe heads, you know, and there's still a lot of people that carry that, right? And my time, I felt this way prior to working for the team, but my time working for the team really crystallized this. I always bring this up when Bron gets brought up in a bigger picture perspective. But one thing my dad always taught me is, like, you treat the janitor the same way you treat the CEO. And LeBron was a personification of that. I just saw too many times him treating people well. And, like, he's the type of guy, because he's such an icon, just like a wink and a nod someone's way or a fist bump to somebody can make somebody really, you know, like, it really leaves an impression on them. And just all the moments that where I just saw him treating people with kindness and respect. And he's a very silly guy. And I mean that in a very complimentary way. This is something that Austin talks about a lot, about how he's a big kid and he just had a levity to him that I don't think you could get 23 years into a career without a certain amount of levity to you and a certain amount of joy to what you bring to the table. And coming to the Lakers and really being our rock for years and years and years, it was the most unstable place this franchise had ever been in. And him coming and steadying the waters, and then AD comes and we win the chip. And we all know how the 20s have gone. It's been a up and down ride, but this team had one really bad year. And we're a little spoiled from a Lakers perspective of, like, when a franchise dips down, it usually takes a few more years to come back up. And we haven't made all our way back up the mountain, but this has been a high 40s, low 50s win team for the last several years. When it looked really bleak after the 22 season, I think it's easy to forget how dark it looked at that point. And the stabilization again of the franchise, I'd argue he helped do it twice. And here we are now with Luka and Austin, and that's the era they're going to be building around. Again, this doesn't come with a lot of shock value for me, because I think it was what the plan was for quite some time. But the gratitude for the 8 years that he gave us of great play, right? I remember when the Lakers signed him, it was like, he's 35 years old. He might be good for the first year or two, but he's really going to start to decline. And by this point, of course, he's not the player he was when he signed here in 2019, but he's still, like you said, an all-star caliber player that it's remarkable that he has been able to sustain. And I'm just really, really grateful for all the years he gave us.
I'm so glad you brought up that kindness and sort of personality joy that he can bring. You saw him up close at the Lakers facilities and at home games and things like that. The times I've interacted or seen LeBron have been on the road up here in the Bay Area. I try to go and cover Lakers games when they would come to San Francisco, and before that, Oakland. And one of the things that I would do if I was there early enough is catch LeBron's warmups. He would go out there and he would do his thing. He would work on this game. And the arena has staff that will shag balls for you and be a part of your warm-up. Whoever LeBron's people are that are out there with him, that are his people that are putting him through the workout, are there. But there's always going to be arena staff, team, sort of. Those are not always Lakers people. They're going to be arena people who would do the same shag balls for Steph and Clay and whoever else. And I always remember LeBron at the end of every single one of those, dapping up those younger people.
Yep.
They're not kids, but they're younger people in their 20s or whatever. And you could just see that those people were, like, so appreciative.
Yeah.
LeBron could easily literally take his ball and go home, right? You could be like, I'm done my workout and I'm going to walk into the tunnel.
And it wouldn't even be him being a jerk about it, right? It'd just be like, oh, I did my thing. This is you doing your job. I'm doing mine. I go on my way. But he always would go out of his way to just do that little bit of acknowledgement.
And he would always just, like, you know, thank you, dap him up, bring him in, little shoulder, all of that stuff. And I always just thought, man, that must be so cool for those people. That's LeBron James right there. And he just went through his workout, but then still took the time at the end to do that. Well, let's take a break here, Pete. And when we come back, I want to talk about the other aspect of this, which is not the breakup, but just him leaving and what it all means. And I don't mean this in a bad way, but I think that there's a reason why LeBron's tenures have always been, you know, he left the Cavs after 7 years and he went to the Heat, and then he left the Heat after 4 years and then he went back to the Cavs. And he was with the Cavs for 4 more years, and then he's with the Lakers now for 8 seasons, but he's leaving again. And it feels like it's time for him to leave as well. And that's not from a, oh, there's burned bridges or anything else, but I feel like there's a life cycle to really anything.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about this with even the longest term coaches or players or anything else. Like, you could look at a guy like Tom Brady, for example, who played damn near 2 decades in the same place, but even he had to leave eventually and be like, I'm still going to do this. I'm going to try to do it at a high level, and I'm going to do it somewhere else. And it feels like this was the natural life cycle for LeBron as well, right? That the team was clearly, I think, ready to transition to the new superstar that they acquired 18 months ago. And I do feel like that there's a certain amount of like a passing of the baton, but it's hard. It's hard when it's a player who is still as good, but also historically great as LeBron. It's like the idea of a relay race, right? And the literal passing of a baton. But when someone was the anchor leg forever and ever and ever, and then suddenly there's like a new kid who's going to be the anchor leg, and then they brought in someone else as well in terms of Austin, who is taking the other prominent role within the things. And you're sort of just like, man, I used to be the guy here, and now I'm not. And even if LeBron goes to a whole new team where he's not the guy there either, like let's say he goes to Golden State and he's culturally going to be behind Steph and maybe even behind Draymond from a culture standpoint of what it all means, I think that he gets to do that by choice rather than through the machinations of the team sort of like progressing on with, quote unquote, without him, even when he's still in the picture, if that makes sense.
Very much so. And this is why I was always skeptical of the idea that he would take less with the Lakers, because at the very, if you're going to pay a guy like that less money, I think the thing that they would want in exchange is a degree of control and say and just where they go and how, like, they can do it on their own terms. And I think that's what LeBron is doing here in informing the Lakers that he's not going to be back. Again, I think that's what the Lakers were expecting in the first place. But I do think that there was the idea that, hey, you know, at the end of our offseason, when we get all of our other stuff done, would you be interested in joining us? But you can hear how that would sound to somebody like LeBron in exactly that context of being the anchor leg for so many years, that the idea that you're an afterthought after we get to the end of our offseason and hopefully you can come back for what we've got left over. I can see just from a pride standpoint that, you know, he would want to be like, I want to dictate the terms of where I go.
And him taking agency in this aspect of things, too. To me, there's a reason why the reporting's being framed the way that it's being framed, right? This is a very LeBron-centric framing of things. Like, Rich Paul has made a statement. LeBron has informed the team he's going to move on. LeBron using whatever agency he has within this feels right to me within this context as well. Even if the Lakers are the ones that are maybe being like seemingly back-footed within this, they're not being back-footed in this. They were totally prepared for this to be one of the outcomes, if not one of the more likely outcomes, if not the likely outcome.
Yeah, I think it was the likely outcome all along. And the like 95% of what you hear, if not more, on the relationship between the two parties is coming from the LeBron and Clutch perspective in terms of what goes public. There's a massive discrepancy between the degree of the narrative that they want to control versus what the Lakers want to control. And that's, I think this is one of the most poorly reported stories of the decade. And I'm just stunned at the degree that there doesn't seem to be an interest in finding out what the Lakers see on things. So, for example, Ramona Shelburne today talked about how the Lakers had sat down with Luka last summer and laid out their plans for what this summer was going to be, and LeBron wasn't in them. To my understanding, that's exactly right, and that's been what it's been all along. But it hasn't been reported that way in any sense. And I'm just, when you're a fan consuming all of this content, it can be so hard to distinguish what's true and what's not. And one of the things that is helpful is to realize, okay, where is this information coming from? Like, there are certain reporters, I'm not going to name them, but you know that when they're reporting on LeBron, it's coming from LeBron's perspective of things, right? And if it's being reported he wants 20 to 30 million with the Lakers, that was not going to happen. That was just never going to happen. And that, like, that lack of information from the Lakers' perspective, while the appetite is so high, like it leads to these discrepancies of just like the way the story was reported, it was never close to what reality was.
Well, this is one of the things that I think you and I have bristled against when it comes to the Lakers internally, that we wish they would do more of trying to control the narrative.
I've yelled at them about this many times, about like you actually lose value in not having any control over how people perceive you.
And the ability to shape things. But I also think that the Lakers have been hurt historically by leaking, particularly in the lead up to like the Anthony Davis trade where things got at their worst, that I honestly think Rob was just like, no, man, Magic's gone now. We're not going to live in this environment where there's a bunch of information getting out all of the time. And if it's to our detriment, we're willing to live with that. I just think that's the wrong approach.
Well, and in some cases, it's to their benefit, right? Like, that's one of the reasons that Jeannie Buss loves Pelinka is that he doesn't say anything. Do you think if the Luka trade got out, because they reportedly knew that that was in the works for a good month in advance. If anybody else finds out about that, does that deal go down? If this story, if the Lakers don't really want to have LeBron back, you imagine how disastrous this season could have been and how dramatic this season could have been if that came out. So there is advantage to keeping it close to the vest for sure.
Yeah, the stuff that Ramona's saying now, on the eve of basically LeBron leaving, that's the sort of thing that you don't want out there ever because you actually don't want the scrutiny. And so I get it. Again, I get it. And it is to their benefit at times. I just think that there needs to be a little bit more of the, like, this is what we're thinking, because the pylon, not the pylon like the freaking end zone, like the literal dogpiling on of stories and narrative. It's very rare that the Lakers are positioned positively within the public sphere of these sorts of things. Now, I will say, this reporting, I think both sides are, or at least from what Shams is saying online, right, which is, I think, the LeBron sort of clutch perspective, the original quotes are coming from Rich Paul, it seems everyone is amicable. And I think that the things that have been said publicly from the Lakers' perspective, which is we want LeBron back or we at least would love for him to retire here, that all of that has been put out there publicly by the organization. And I think LeBron basically being like, I'm not going to come back. I'm saying it now, hours before free agency starts, so that everyone's clear on where things stand. And I just think everyone sort of being like, we had our run. We're going to shake hands now and go in opposite directions. And when we see each other on the court next, we'll compete our asses off against each other. But afterwards, it'll be hugs and smiles and everything else. Like, can you imagine whatever team LeBron plays for next year, their first matchup against the Lakers?
Oh,
and
boy.
Then after the game, Luka and Austin and those guys doing their handshakes and doing what, like, it'll be a moment and it'll be great and it'll be nostalgic, but it'll be with LeBron on a different team. Let's take our Sega break here, Pete. And when we come back, let's shift the narrative a little bit ourselves and what comes next for the Lakers without LeBron James.
So there's a good deal of hubris in the idea that you are going to lose LeBron James on purpose and get better and build Luka Doncic the team that he needs to be able to compete for an NBA championship, right? The whole idea of the summer of 26, we'll show you then. This is the plan we're going to lay out for you. It's going to look like this, this, and that. And we're going to be ready to go to war with that. One of the things that I like about the summer, one of the only things I like about this summer so far, because there's so much anxiety attached, is I feel like Pelinka and the front office really own this summer in a way that they never have before. I know this; he's very much a figurehead that everybody views as like the reason that everything this last decade has happened. But the Lakers have, post-Magic, have taken a very collaborative approach where basically what Pelinka tries to do is fulfill the wishes of his star and his coach. And what that does politically is it's like, well, we agreed to this. There's not as much pressure on him, right? It's like there's not as much blame if it goes wrong of like, well, we talked about this. This is what we all agreed on. And I just went out and executed it. This summer is all on them, right? And when you look out that far in advance and be like, hey, we're not going to have LeBron back this summer, but we are also going to build Luka a team that he can really go to war with. How do you square the circle there?
It's going to be very difficult. I said this to you the other day, and I've sort of been hinting at this on the pod, but the Lakers have been operating as though they were going to be a cap space team for months now. If there was any sort of signal that, oh, LeBron was a priority, you don't get to cap space without renouncing LeBron James. The whole idea that the Lakers were going to have $50 million in cap space, that only comes from renouncing LeBron's rights and renouncing Rui's rights. The cap space plan, it didn't necessarily mean that LeBron was going to have to leave, but it was definitely going to mean that he wasn't going to return on like a bird rights contract, that's for sure. The idea of like what comes next and the sort of hubris that you mentioned and the pendulum swinging all the way in Rob's and his front office's direction now, that's very much true. The prospect of building a team around Luka and Austin, obviously, is going to be hard, but not impossible, Pete. They clearly now have an understanding of all the cap space they're going to have and all of the different avenues that they can go in terms of trying to use that cap space. They can use it on free agents unrestricted. They could try to put in an offer sheet on a restricted free agent. They could try to arrange a sign-in trade with a restricted free agent. There were reports yesterday that the Lakers are going to get a phone call with Jalen Duren. There were reports as well yesterday that Walker Kessler is supposed to meet with three teams in Los Angeles and that one of them is likely to be the Lakers. The specifics of which teams he was going to meet with were not reported, but I think the Lakers are going to be one of those teams. And now, Pete, they can go into the marketplace to any team and basically say, what would it take for us to get player X off of your team? We've got cap space and we've got draft picks and we could potentially facilitate a deal. If you like players from other teams, maybe those teams want a trade exception from us. And there's a lot of machinations that can happen here, Pete. Believe me, I was in the trade machine the instant the news broke with LeBron. I'm in it all the time anyway.
Yeah, you are.
But starting to look at different players and who could be out there for the Lakers to sort of fill. You're not going to replace LeBron, but to sort of restructure the team around a Luka group where it's just like, what can we do to win the championship?
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to replace LeBron in a literal sense, but like you have to replace a lot of player now and a lot more player than I think everybody anticipated prior to this. Like, I think a lot of the talk about the Lakers had been sort of built around this idea of last year's team, right? And that it was sort of at least a starting point for what they would be doing this summer. But when you combine this with the news that it looks like Marcus might be heading out as well, it's way more of a total break it down to the foundation type of summer. And we're starting from Luka and Austin and pretty much nobody else in terms of high-level rotation players. Like if you're talking the top 7-8 guys on a team, that's it. And we've got 5-6 spots to fill.
The Lakers were on the list with the Warriors and I think one other team of teams that have the most free agents. The Lakers have 10 free agents. And right now, Austin is on a cap hold. Right. And he's going to be resigned. Those numbers were reported. They just guaranteed Bronny's contract yesterday. Right. So Bronny makes like $2.3 million. They drafted Cameron Carr, but his deal is not signed yet. But they drafted Cameron Carr. And then they have Vando, Jake, Ayton opted in, and they've got Adu and they've got Dalton. And that's their team. Rui's a free agent. Jackson's a free agent. Marcus is a free agent. Kennard's a free agent. They waived Nick Smith Jr., so he's not on the team anymore. So there's a lot of what are we going to do here with this group? And Dalton and Vando weren't even in the rotation last year, Pete. Adu's a second year. He's about to be a second year player. It's just like, these aren't the guys where you're just like, yeah, man, this is our championship core around Luka Doncic. And so if you're the Lakers, what is your vision right now? I know they've been planning for this. We talked about it all pod. This isn't a surprise to them. This was a likely outcome for them. Where do you think their head is at? And do you think that there's like a big stealth move out there coming? Or do you think that it's sort of like the, hey, we're going to make a run at these restricted free agent centers and try to fill in the gaps as best we can?
You had a hilarious idea before the pod that we talked about a long time ago, but you brought it back up that made me chuckle. That was like, yeah, it sounds like something they would do, that I'll kick it to you in a moment on that front. But I'm fascinated by this because the main characters that they seem to be pursuing are the restricted free agent centers. That's going to be one of, if not the big move of the offseason. And the timing on that, like those contracts offer sheets don't even have to be matched until July 7th at 11:59 p.m. So basically July 8th. It's June 30th as we record this. It's going to be a torturous 9 days if that's the case. And much of free agency would be over by then. So how do they reconcile the timing of not knowing if they could do that or not? And this is part of the reason why I think a sign and trade would be likelier. I also don't think that either Detroit or Utah has the financial pressure to let them go. Like we had talked a little bit about, well, maybe Utah, if they draft Cam Boozer or AJ DeBanza, they'll have a bit of a minutes log jam on top of everything. They didn't. They drafted a guard. And while their money is all tied up in their front court, that doesn't really matter this year for them. It will matter next year with Keontae George's extension on the horizon. And they could choose to move him because they've got Peterson, right? They've got a bunch of directions they can go in. But all of their guards are on rookie contracts. They got Peterson, they got George, and they got Isaiah Collier as the backup. They probably need a fourth guard that can defend or something like that. But that's not we have to move mountains to be able to do that. Even the Nurkic signing, he signed a contract that is commensurate with what backups get paid. So while it was a little bit of a like, ooh, is this insurance for them losing Kessler? Maybe, but they're in the driver's seat on that. A player has not moved via offer sheet since Bogdan Bogdanovic went from the Kings to the Atlanta Hawks in November of 2020. It's been 6 years since a player moved on restricted free agency. And so the main names that we've heard are, to me, still unlikely. I'm hoping for them, really hoping for Kessler especially, but I don't have this expectation that that's going to work out. So what the hell are the Lakers going to do? I don't know. I'm fascinated to see what they do. But the thing I was alluding to prior to the pod, you know, we'd done the pods about the elite scorers that are like the elite off-ball scorers in the NBA and Trey Murphy, Lauri Markkanen. D, who's the king of those guys?
Kevin Durant's the king of those guys. And so I had texted you this morning and I'm just like, hey, quick question. And whenever I ask someone, hey, quick question, it is not a quick question.
No,
not
man, for it's the a person long answer. It's a long conversation is what you're actually saying. Hey, long conversation ahead.
My question will be short and quick. The aftermath of it
will not be
at all. And so I said, hey, quick question. Would you want Kevin Durant? And you were like, oh my God. We should talk about this on the pod.
I was like, I would deserve this after all the shit I talked about him this year, right?
Well, during the playoff series, right. For sure. It's just like, oh, trap this guy and like, yada, yada, yada.
But that was my point, right? Is like, Kevin Durant's always needed somebody else to dribble for him. Well, guess what?
Guess what? The Lakers got a couple of those dudes. That's for sure. Look, Kevin Durant, as far as I know, is not on the market. They are not going to make a move or anything like that, right? That said, the noise after their loss to the Lakers when Durant was out with injury, a lot of that was like uncertainty. I had heard reporting around that time of like, you know, they sort of buried the burner scandal stuff, but that there were still like feelings around that stuff for sure. And I'm trying to sort of put the dots together on a lot of like off-season stuff that Pete, this is going to be a crazy off-season. Mm-hmm. If you and I were running a national pod, we would have had full-on podcasts about what's happening in Boston with Jaylen Brown, about conspiracies around Nikola Jokic potentially pushing off his extension signing, and all of the things that are sort of brewing out there.
LaMelo Ball and Ja Morant get traded, and it's sort of like a one-day story, if that, because there's so much other crazy shit going on.
In bringing it back to Durant, one of the things I thought about Durant was just like, oh man, like, I wonder if Houston's just going to be like, okay, well, Fred VanVleet opts in. We're just going to run it back with this same group of guys. We're going to maybe sign Marcus Smart with the taxpayer MLE, and like, that's going to be their team when Durant is potentially going into an offseason with a walk year. So Durant has a contract for next season, and then his season in 27-28 is a player option. These are the exact circumstances that Giannis just got traded on. They're the exact circumstances that Anthony Davis got traded on when he got traded to the Lakers. This is the timeline for when players move like that. And now Durant's older, and so it's trickier, right? There's not some long-term four-year contract that's waiting for him on the other side. That said, he's Kevin Durant. He was, I think, what, second team All-NBA last season? And it was just an interesting thought exercise that I was having around the idea of not replacing LeBron James, but of reorienting your team around a Luka Doncic group while still seeking out high-level talent, which we know the Lakers, historically, that's their bag. Pete, like, I get it. Other teams do this. The Lakers do it the best.
And I know what the Lakers mean by building around Luka, at least on the offensive end, is really prioritizing jump shooting and the idea that you could space the floor around them. And that was when Pelinka was talking in that postseason presser with Redick about the proof of concept of what happened in the month of March. I would argue that actually, that was the only time you had Luka, LeBron, and Austin all at the same time. So if that is what you wanted to see, that's what you would have seen. But I know that what they saw in a lot of that was the level of spacing that they had even before LeBron came back, because they started their run when LeBron was injured. And they really liked that weekend where they beat the Wolves and the Knicks. It's like, this is what it's supposed to look like. And so I know they want to put premium spacing around those guys while also having somebody who can contribute on the defensive end. And even at his age, KD can do that a bit, right? But yeah, that sounds very much in line with what the Lakers would want. From Houston's perspective, why the hell would they want to do that? I think it would have to be a Jaylen Brown type of player ends yep. up in Houston. And then, you know, I don't know if you heard Simmons' very funny rant about Jaylen Brown not having much value in terms of picks and things like that. But I think the Lakers would send a couple picks probably in that way. Now, do the Lakers and the Celtics combine on a deal or something like that? We're in fantasy land right now. I totally understand that. But you had brought up the idea of like a stealth type of move that nobody's really talked about. Like, this sounds to me very much like a thing that the Lakers would at least try to do.
Yes. And again, it's fantasy land. But if it did happen, then, you know, come talk to me after and I might have some lottery numbers for you as well. Before we wrap up, Pete, free agency, man, just a few more hours away and it's going to jump off with a bang. Every year, third of the league is free agents. Guys are already starting to sign to stay with their own teams. Right when we started to record, Robert Williams went back to Portland. While we've been recording, another backup center, Jock Landale, went back to the Hawks. By the way, Pete, these center numbers are crazy.
This is the worst time to have a need for a center. We ignored the freaking position all decade, and now we find ourselves in a position needing centers when they're the most freaking expensive they've been in years.
Porzingis, $20 million a season to go back to the Warriors. Robert Williams, basically $14 million. Jock Landale, $14 million deal. Nurkic signed a deal for $11 million a year. Ayton opted in for $8 million, Pete. He seems like the great value signing. If nothing else, I hate to say it, but he's a good player and he's making $8 million next season.
Yeah, I mean, again, I would be furious if that's what the resolution of all of this is, but we're talking about paying Mitchell Robinson $15 million as opposed to DA. Like, DA is a better player than Mitchell Robinson. Maybe people disagree with me on that, but DA is a legitimate starting center, like at least relative to Mitchell Robinson, who plays like 14 minutes a game in the playoffs. And again, this is all way below the threshold of you've punted all of these seasons and that's what you end up with at the end of 2026. So I'm going to be mad if it's either of those. But yeah, DA is on at least a value contract.
Yeah, at least I feel like he's underpaid for the type of production that he provides. This honestly makes me worry about a player like Jackson Hayes, honestly. I was like, hey, man, maybe the Lakers could get Jackson Hayes back for like $5 million a season or $6 million a season, something like that. Backups all around the league are asking for tens of millions of dollars a season and are getting it. Mamu is a guy that basically opted out of his contract. He's a backup center from Toronto. The Lakers have been linked to him as well. And there are rumors that he wants $10 million a year. And I'm just like, this dude, he's good and a stretch five and he's got a valuable skill set, but he's a backup. Is he going to make $10 million a season?
This is part of the value, though, of Jackson having the cap hold that he does. It's a similar situation of Austin, where I've seen conflicting numbers of it being 4.5 or 6.3. But relative to a lot of these other guys that are getting the numbers that they're getting, Jackson's in the mix for that, right? So I do think that Jackson is still fairly likely to be our backup center just from a, it doesn't matter what we pay him over that amount, yes, at least for this season.
He's also Slovenian, so.
Yes, you exactly. Know. Got to factor that in.
Keep that in mind. Anyways, Pete, I don't want to go too long here. We're probably going to have to record 1,000 more pods.
Yes.
The rest of the week, just because of all the news that's going to come through. Happy free agency to all of our listeners. It's finally here. Within the next few days, I think we're going to have a very good idea, Pete, of what the Lakers look like. We already know at least two things, Pete. Austin Reeves is returning, and LeBron James is not.
Crazy.
And so quite a turn for our Lakers, Pete.
I hope everybody can keep their anxiety down as much as possible. I think there's a good chance that with the Lakers being in the mix for the restricted free agents, that's usually a domino that falls last. And so what could happen and what already is happening with LeBron going and possibly Marcus as well is a little stretch of a few days where the Lakers lose good players and they're just signing these like bench guys that don't conflict with any offers for Kessler or Duren. And it's just this huge discrepancy between like, remember last year where it was like DFS goes out and it's like Jake LaRavia and Jackson Hayes are our first two signings and everybody's going crazy because of that. Please don't confuse this with me saying, don't worry, everything's going to be okay. I don't know that. I just think that there's going to be an order that things happen in where on the front end of things, it might feel a little bit scary.
Yeah, and this is free agency, and this is what happens when you don't yet have a roster built. I will say, and I'll continue to say this every single time, that my heart starts to palpitate too fast or I start to think about something else, is the Lakers do have the hardest piece to get in all of anything. And that's, they've got Luka Doncic. And I'm very happy that they're going to be able to retain Austin Reeves. And I'm very much looking forward to starting to get some resolution. But in between now and then, we are going to be feeling the angst a little bit. And I don't know what the Lakers have up their sleeve and what Rob is going to do, but he's on the clock.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Appreciate you, LeBron. We're going to do at least one, probably multiple episodes, just kind of reflecting on the LeBron era after all the dust settles, I think, with free agency and all that. Want a little bit more time. The news dropped like 30 minutes before we started recording. So just want some time to digest it. But we'll talk more about the end of an era. But just a thank you, LeBron, for everything. Whole new world ahead for the Lakers. We will be back either later today if some big news drops or tomorrow. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Ainge has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebounded Lowry. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. Shaq with his 8th block. An NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance.
Right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one,
miss it!
Unbelievable. It's over.
And shot clock now to 5. Bryant. Yeah! And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.